Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. Robbie was wearing a tank top right before we turned this on and put a shirt on over top of it. So unfortunately for all you people out there, you don't get to see him like I saw him, which is an absolute shame. Just jacked out of his mind, hair flowing, black tank top. It was literally not safe for work.
That's what everyone always thinks of when they think of me, is just jacked out of his mind.
Well,
that is the
so skinny that the muscles are visible. Yes. Congratulations are in order. First of all, congratulations to friend of the pod, we wish, Robert Downey Jr. on his Oscar victory.
Yep.
He won Best Supporting Actor. Robbie, did the Oscars fulfill your dreams? Your hopes and dreams? Like I said, it's like your Super Bowl, so break it down.
Yeah, man, they totally did. I feel like, I have to, while we're talking about congratulations, I have to show this guy because I took the, so every year at the Oscar party, we like fill out our own ballots and whoever wins gets their own Oscar. And I took this year's. So I had in part because I did not just go I didn't go all in on Oppenheimer. I actually think some of the things you and I talked about in some of our screensaver episodes,
came true.
Yeah. Like I think I went for Poor Things for costume and production design. And I think they won both of those categories just in general. Like, so I guess this is an indication of like the movies that I thought should win pretty much did across the board. And it's funny, like I noticed the headlines the next day were so boring because there wasn't any controversial, like there was no slap or anything like to unpack.
An all-world I'm Just Ken performance. I mean,
My gosh. Did you watched it?
I didn't watch the Oscars, but I saw the I'm Just Ken performance. I was blown away on so many levels. First of all, it's hilarious.
Incredible.
Second of all, I had no idea he's actually that good at singing and performing. Like, he has as much charisma as any performer.
Dude, he's so funny.
It's so funny. I've been saying this for a year. I want him on the MCU side of things.
Yeah.
He's even naturally funny to me.
The moment where he was like going from Greta Gerwig to Margot Robbie to Emma Stone and having them sing along, and it was just like,
or
you're
just
right,
how he started right behind Margot Robbie staring at her.
I loved
how he treated all the male band members. Like, he would like hold their hand as he walks by them, you know?
Did you watch his bit with Emily Blunt?
Yes, where they're joking about, we're past it. We're not making fun.
I also thought that was really funny.
Dude, he's just natural. He goes all in on everything. Have you ever seen The Knife Guys with Will Ferrell on Jimmy Kimmel's show? Please Google it after this. He and Will Ferrell sell knives on Jimmy Kimmel's. Like, it's a recurring bit, but he goes all in. He's the knife guy.
I will say, like, I do not, I really love SNL as a kind of an institution. I go through phases of watching it more and less regularly, but we always watch at least a few episodes a season, I feel like.
Sure.
Depending on who's hosting. I still think that this is a hard recommendation for anybody that's listening that has Hulu or whatever. Peacock, I guess, is what SNL's on now.
Don't ask me.
Like, the season premiere from like 2018 or something was Ryan Gosling.
Okay.
And it is still one of the funniest episodes of that show I have ever seen because he, like, obviously, I mean, the host adds to what sketches get written and all that, but I also think that just his the role that he plays. You've probably seen some of those sketches, like the Papyrus video short, of course, Avatar. Like, that's all from that one.
Okay.
Man, it's so good.
Who could he play in the MCU? Like, Cillian Murphy for Dr. Doom, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm all on board with that. Who could Ryan Gosling play? What's a character we don't have yet where it could have that Han Solo slick but really funny? I mean, he would be like a Star-Lord. Would be a perfect example of what he could be, but now it's already cast. You know what I mean? That's kind of the vibe I'm thinking.
Yeah. No, I feel like... I think Candace and I talked about when we were reading the Matt Fraction Hawkeye stuff.
He could be Hawkeye?
I think the version of Hawkeye in the comics...
Sure.
Like, that isn't, you know...
But I'm saying from now on, it's too late. He's not doing that.
Yeah,
but if you were to join, is there anybody left?
Well, I feel like people have talked about Ghost Rider, but I don't... I think that, like...
It's too intense.
That's too... Yeah, I don't... I mean, I could see... Like, I mean, if
he kind of does it in Blade Runner, the, like, tough vibe, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, he could pull it off for sure. But I think
it would be a shame to not have him in a slightly lighter role, you know, like something a little looser.
I think he would actually, again, this is because we just had cast it, so it's not fair game. But, like, the Human Torch is the first character that came to mind for me.
Yeah. I said looser. I meant Lucy Goosey or looser, not looser.
Let me think about it. I'll get back to you. Probably like on the, you know, I think that there are some options on the X-Men side of things, which will actually transition us.
Yeah.
Well,
hold on. Don't transition us.
But before we transition us, I did want to also say, man, talking about sheer charisma, it's so fascinating to me to watch all of these famous, beautiful people in a room together that are all like, their job is to be in front of a camera and be charismatic, and how even in that context, RDJ is like shining like way beyond like almost anybody else. Gosling is like another example of that. Like, it's so interesting seeing people like it's like whenever, I don't know, it's like an NBA player or something where, like, obviously...
Sports metaphor, please. Go.
Like, if they're like, just going to play pickup with a random person, they look incredible by comparison. But then you've got, like, the Michael Jordans that look incredible by comparison to other NBA players.
Sure.
And it's like, that was the... It's just, like, I've watched a lot of his award speeches through the whole Oppenheimer run. And, like... Did you watch his Golden Globes?
I did, and I watched his Oscars one, yes.
Where he's like, I know what you're thinking. You know, why does everything seem to be going my way? It's just like he's so quick and funny and charming, and like, it just, I loved watching him the whole night. He was so excited for everybody else. It was just like, man, he is just the king. It was really, really fun to see him get recognized.
Obviously.
And Cillian.
Yeah, I think there were two people in particular that we were excited to see victorious. Robert, just because he needed to get one. And, you know, we've had the discussion about, you know, could he have been nominated for something from Endgame or Civil War? We think so, but he didn't. Mm-hmm. But at least he got one now. And then the other one is obviously Christopher Nolan, because it's an absolute travesty that he had not won Best Director or Best Picture yet. And he did. He won both. So,
and he was such the star of the night. You know, like everybody that won for Oppenheimer.
He took the very professional high road in his speech. Didn't bash anyone. I think it really actually means something to him. He said that last line of, now I finally, or I won one, and this will, like, now I'm honored to be a part of film history forever a little bit, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, yeah, he thinks it's a big deal to get this.
The thing Nolan said that stuck with me was talking about how, like, we're only 100 years into film.
Yeah, good point.
As an art form, and he was saying, you know, compare that to being 100 years into theater or art, you know, and how, like, how far those things have come since then. And so I thought that was like an inspiring, yeah, it was perfect. I thought the other thing that I really loved that I don't know that we really got to talk about in our Oppenheimer episode, cause it hadn't really clicked for me, but obviously Cillian Murphy has been in every major Nolan movie since Batman Begins?
Yeah. I think it's five or six.
This is his Interstellar. Was he in Interstellar?
This is his sixth project, I think. Not Interstellar. Yes, Dunkirk. Yes, Dark
Oh, and I guess
Knight,
he wasn't in Tenet either. He's been in a lot.
This is his sixth, I think he said.
Yeah. I think what I love is that of all of the movies Nolan has made that are, I mean, he's made so many great movies with like mega lead actors, like even Leo in Inception or McConaughey. I mean, I think that was either right before or right after he won Best Actor. But I love that it is Killian who has been kind of this like background actor that kind of takes the lead in the first Nolan movie that gets this level of recognition. Like, not because Leo didn't deserve it or anything like that. I just think it's really cool given how much, like, there have been a lot of pieces about Killian just being this kind of like actor's actor that's been just consistently churning out great work for decades. And so it's really cool to see.
And the exact opposite personality of Robert Downey Jr. So introverted, like hates the spotlight. It's amazing. If you watch any interviews, I've watched a lot. Mm-hmm. Robert brings out a fun side of him because he is so quiet. Like if they do a late night show with Robert, Emily, and Killian, he won't say anything unless directly asked.
I mean, my understanding is, I think part of the reason he probably gets on with Nolan so well is I think they're both pretty off the grid as creators. Like, I think that this is the most, which makes sense. Like, this is the most Killian has ever been brought into the spotlight. And so I think that, you know, you're getting all the like thirst trap GQ photo shoots and everything. But I think that like, I think he's normally just living like a very normal dad life. And I love the stories about how dedicated he was on set because I know that like Robert's talked about how he would never come out to dinner with them because he was one, like having to learn, you know, a whole chunk of the script in Dutch, but then also he was always trying to lose weight so that he could look more like Oppenheimer. Mm-hmm. And so he just would never go to dinner. He would just like, was always trying to eat less food to look more emaciated. That in and of itself is never that impressive to me unless it is, like, I think Jared Leto is the kind of actor that like does things like that, but I just don't feel like there's anything to show for it. Like, it's like, okay, like you went through all of Morbius.
Shots fired.
In like, you know, walking on crutches and using a wheelchair and
for Morbius,
like, I don't think anybody came away thinking that that dedication paid off. But I like that, like, brutal. Killian did, like, to go through that, to slowly like pay your dues, and then to just get that kind of recognition. I was just in general, I was really excited because for so long, like, I was so afraid, I guess, that it was going to be a moment like Angela Bassett in last year's Oscars, where it's like, man, like I love Everything Everywhere. I love Jamie Lee Curtis. That really feels like the wrong call.
Oh yeah,
I forgot about that. A bummer.
That's a massive wrong call. That movie is so good, but Jamie Lee Curtis is good thing number 30 in that movie.
And it's not her fault. It's just the nature of
She's hardly even in it.
But I mean, we just watched Wakanda Forever, and I just kept thinking, like, holy cow, man, yeah, Angela Bassett is just out of this world. And so I think the only Ludwig Göransson is the other one that I was going to be really bummed if he didn't get recognition.
His second time now?
Yeah. And which is crazy because he's like so young relatively. But
Seven total awards for Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I was trying to think. I'm pretty sure, unless, you know, it was an award that was off screen that I missed, I don't think Killers got anything.
Killers of the Flower Moon didn't. I'm debating if I should say this.
Oh.
Martin Scorsese is starting to get on my nerves. I was going back through his filmography, and I said in that episode, I really like his movies. I don't know if I really do like his movies in general. And wow. Then he's becoming kind of obnoxiously loud. You know, he's the anti-Marvel guy, which I can deal with a little bit, but
right.
He just says some stuff that I'm like, I don't know. I think he's losing touch. So apparently, I think I read this right, that he's never won actually Best Picture either. He's like over 12 or over 13. Either way, it's something like that.
I know he's won best. I think he won best director for Departed.
He's never won best picture.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He tweeted or said something in this article where he said, if Killers of the Flower Moon doesn't win anything, I'm going to go make a stupid bad movie out of revenge. It comes off to me like, oh, my movies are so good and so elevated that if I don't win one, I'll be shocked. And I watch it. I'm like, it's a good movie, but I'm fine with you not winning one. I don't know. Me and him, we're growing further and further apart. I do not like his opinions, and I'm starting to like his movies less because of it. I'm sorry. That's hot take.
Yeah.
But it's getting on my nerves. It's like, dude, that comes off as like really egotistical, especially to something that I feel like doesn't deserve the hate in Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, I don't know if he was implying like, well, I'll go make a blockbuster instead. You know, it's like, come on, dude.
I mean,
it's elevated over all of us. Wow. Congrats.
There are other, I think I was going to be disappointed if I never thought that Killers was going to win unless it was some kind of just nod to his career in general. Like we kind of talked about, maybe that was factoring into
I thought Lily could win or some kind of like costumes or something.
So I think I was kind of surprised that Lily didn't win. I was happy for Emma Stone. I have not seen what the reaction was to that, but
she seemed genuinely surprised.
Yeah, I mean, which was also charming. And, you know, like if something,
I related to the 3-year-old bit when she thanked her child, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to move on. This is an X-Men episode. Holy cow. 20 minutes in. I know. Oscars and X-Men.
I know. Although we did have on the schedule originally an Oscar debrief.
Yeah.
There were three categories that I guess maybe two that could have gone the other way. Cause I'm happy for Emma having won. I was going to be excited to see Lily Gladstone win that. But I'm not upset about it because Zone of Interest did some really great things with sound. That is the one category Oppenheimer didn't get that I think it probably should have.
And that was the one category I said it was going to win in my initial review. Whoops.
Oh, right. But I mean, still, you know, one score. The other thing for me was two movies we didn't really talk about, but Anatomy of a Fall won best original screenplay, I think. And that movie was great and really interesting as a lawyer because it's all about like the French legal system and this murder trial. But I was gunning for Past Lives there to win the best original screenplay. And I say that here in closing because that is one of the movies that if we had had more time, I was really excited for you to watch because I think you would really enjoy that one.
Okay.
As kind of like in the La La Land vein.
I can still watch it even if I don't talk about it here on this podcast. So
no, exactly. That's why it's like it's always Oscar season at Friends from Work.
at the Earl household. At the Earl sanctum it is. Will we see Dune Part 2 here at all next year? Maybe. I have an audio engineer friend who never talks to me about movies. Not a huge movie guy. I got a text last night at 11:30 p.m. I didn't see it till this morning. That he had just walked out of the theater and was blown away by Dune and said, I can't get over how good it sounded and looked. And I said, dude, that's exactly what I said. It's probably the best looking and sounding movie. He was all the way in the weeds of like, they had to have done all ADR with the dialogue because it was so cleanly mixed. And I'm like, yeah, maybe, but he was all, but see, like that is the takeaway even from like nerds. It's from audio nerds. It sounded so good. Anyways, before X-Men, my last congratulations as a follow-up to a week and a half ago. Congratulations to friend of the pod, Kirk Cousins, brand new contract. It's just staggering. Yes, he already has a lot of money, but anytime you put pen to paper and when you put your name on a piece of paper, you're going to get a $50 million signing bonus with another $50 million guaranteed regardless of what happens, with the potential of it being up to $180 million more. I need people to put that in perspective. He's our age.
Yeah.
He's not like a wealthy billionaire CEO that's 60 years old. He is my age, and he's getting another $50 million check. It's not all about the money. I'm just saying from my perspective, right, that part is so mind-blowing to me. So we talked to him right before, like while these decisions were kind of getting worked out. He's going to the Atlanta Falcons. So I have so many mixed emotions, by the way. Like, I know he does too. Like, a lot of sadness to be leaving Minnesota. So if any Vikings fans are listening, know that I'm still kind of in the grieving process, but I'm going to be eventually so stoked about Atlanta. For me, he's going to be 3.5 hours from me, which is so cool. So just seeing him a lot more, but also going to a ton of games. The Falcons are more a part of the culture down here, obviously, than the Vikings are. So, and I he's really stoked on the opportunity. Like, he's had some unbelievably special conversations with people from Atlanta. They really believe in him, which I think it feels good to be believed in. And then his in-laws already live there. So he's kind of going to a house that he already owns and right by his wife's family. And his wife's brothers are close friends of his too. So like, it's going to be a pretty natural transition, but anyways, congrats to him. $180 million richer since the last time we talked to him on this podcast.
Man, I remember the first time I got $180 million. Yeah. I mean, it's unfathomable, but also so well-deserved. I feel like just given the kind of person he is and the career he's had. I mean, talking about people that put in the work and the time, and obviously he's been a big deal quarterback for a while, but I also know that there were times where he didn't seem to be getting his due. So
yeah, good point.
Fun to see. Fun week for all of the folks that we root for at Friends for Work.
That's right. Including me getting to see you in a tank top. So thank you for that.
Including
X-Men 97 is on our doorstep. And we're going to give you a quick primer to get your minds right after a quick word from these sponsors. And by the way, check out nerdriot.shop and use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK if you want to check out some X-Men stuff. They have some cool X-Men stuff on there.
Yeah,
Robbie, here's the thing. I think this is how we should approach this because it's true. And I think there will be a lot of people in our audience like me, which is I truly have no idea what I'm about to watch this week. What do I need to know about this? I have some specific questions, but I think just inform an audience that doesn't know anything about it. Talk to me as if I'm 5 years old and tell me what I'm about to see.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I think first off, it's just important to recognize, because I don't know that we've really delved into this, certainly on the main feed, how monumental this show was in so many ways. Like, to start,
well, even just there, so people, this is a continuation of the show of our childhood from 97.
Yeah, so that's the I guess the first place for people that maybe didn't grow up there grow up with the show, or people that just haven't thought about it since the 90s, which is fair. This is supposed to be just the next season, essentially, in the X-Men animated series that ran throughout the 90s. They are bringing back, I think, as many voice cast members as they can, as are available. Like, I know that there are a couple of new folks in the cast, although even the new folks are kind of voice acting legends within that community. But like, I think the big headlines, we have the same voice actors returning for Beast, who I think is kind of one of the more iconic characters from that show. Wolverine, obviously, Storm. I guess two things, just as kind of a starting point. One, this really did introduce an entire generation, like our generation really, to the X-Men, but also to Marvel stuff. You know, we've talked about how Marvel almost went bankrupt in the 90s and all of the, like, all the reasons why Iron Man shouldn't have ever happened. The one thing that was kind of keeping Marvel afloat through this period was the X-Men stuff. And this show really took that from a primarily comics audience to like a household name and became
And this aired once a week? Once a week on Saturday mornings, is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think sometimes they would do double feature episodes, like two-parters, but I think generally it was once a week, you know, during the season.
But, and this was pre or post Spider-Man animated shows?
So this was pre the 90s Spider-Man animated show, which I've talked about as kind of my entry point, but only by like a year. That's why this really did kick off. Like, some people say that the Marvel cartoon universe that existed in the 90s was a prototype for the MCU, in that they introduced the X-Men property, which was really successful. The Spider-Man show was really successful. They also had, like, with varying success, but I still think a decent amount of viewership, like Iron Man, Fantastic Four shows. They had a Silver Surfer show, and it was all running on this Fox Kids, like Saturday morning slot.
Okay.
X-Men was to that era, you know, what Iron Man was to, to ours in terms of just,
well, like, I was even aware of it without seeing it ever. I was aware of the fact that it was happening. So,
yeah. Well, and one thing that I think is kind of unique about this show compared to something like Batman, the animated series, which was the other big cartoon juggernaut, at least on the kids' side of this era, like, that show is pretty episodic. Like, the way that it works is, like, you have a, I don't know if you watched any of that growing up much. I don't think you did. I think we've talked about that. But
yeah.
The nice thing about that show is you turn it on and you don't really have to know anything else. Like, every episode is fairly self-contained. They don't give every villain an origin story. Like, some villains, they just assume you're kind of aware of as, like, someone that knows Batman lore. And so it's like, whatever is playing, that's kind of its own thing. X-Men really kicked off the, like, long running stories, like a whole season long arc where it's like, well, maybe every episode is kind of unique, but at the beginning and end of every episode, you're checking in on this ongoing thing with Xavier and Magneto. And it's like, that I think is also pretty significant from an MCU perspective, because it's laying the groundwork for everything is connected, everything has payoff. And then they did start, like, eventually merging, like, having guest appearances from Spider-Man.
Sure.
From other, and so,
yeah,
it was.
I can see how that'd be a big deal back then. Did
yeah.
the show start in 97 or finish in 97?
So I think the idea is this is the season that would have been in 97. I think it finished in 96.
Oh, so finished in 96. Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
The other
so
thing
X-Men
I was going to.
So X-Men 97 is a new name. The 97 is a new thing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was originally just X-Men, the animated series.
Did any of these characters, were they supposed to have made the trip over to the X-Men 2000 series? Like, when you saw Professor X in the live-action X-Men 2000, is there any carryover from the Professor X from this show? Or are there two totally separate things?
Like, in terms of, like, continuity?
Yeah, or, like, storyline-wise, yeah.
No, I think it was supposed to be a totally different thing.
Okay.
But I do
think... You obviously
think,
knew the character better because
right,
of that.
Right, right. And I think, like, that's another big... Like, I don't think we... I mean, I think it's positive that we would not have gotten the X-Men movie that we got if we even got any X-Men movie, if not for the series, because it made it such a household name. I think the other piece of that I was going to say in terms of just the influence of this show, I don't think people realize necessarily, unless you're a Marvel Comics fan, that, I mean, I think the X-Men, let me fact check myself here. I think the first issue came out in September 1963, which was about a year after Amazing Fantasy 15 released, which was the first Spider-Man appearance. Mm. So it's Stan Lee and Jack Kirby back in the same era where they're creating Thor and the Hulk and the Avengers. And it's like in that golden era, but the X-Men for the longest time were kind of like the, not like redheaded stepchild, but they weren't ever really the star of the show. Like okay. Spider-Man was for a long time. The Avengers were for a long time. Obviously, Fantastic Four is what kicked all that off. But the team would also be, and that's why I say this, kind of unrecognizable to a lot of people because the original X-Men team did not have Wolverine. It did not have Storm. You didn't have Nightcrawler or Colossus. Like it was Cyclops, Iceman, Jean Grey, who was Marvel Girl at the time, Angel, and Beast, but without any of the fur.
Okay, okay. Two questions there. Not to put you on the spot, but what is the order of the comic creations of those four main properties? When did Stan Lee come up with Spider-Man, Avengers, X-Men, and Fantastic Four? What was first?
So Fantastic Four was the very first.
That was kind of his very first idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. You know, he had been working in comics since he was pretty young. I actually think one of the fun little tidbits about Stan Lee is that Captain America was created over 20 years before any of these other properties because obviously it was a wartime thing.
Oh,
and
okay.
He was, it was like actually famously the first issue of Captain America shows him punching Adolf Hitler on the jaw, which is where the Captain America First Avenger gag comes from. That was actually before we had even joined the Allied forces in World War II. So it was kind of a controversial move.
Okay.
And so
is Captain America the first character Stan Lee on a Marvel level, like a big level, came up with?
He did not come up with him. He did. I think he gets credit for just as like a assistant editor or whatever role he had as a young guy. I think he's the one that came up with the circular shield for Captain America, which is a pretty big component.
So then he goes like, really, it's Fantastic Four, then Spider-Man, Avengers, and then X-Men is after all that?
It's right in there. Like it's Fantastic Four. And then roughly a year later, Spider-Man takes off. And I think right around that time, like I think Thor was technically maybe between Fantastic Four and Spider-Man. Hulk was, I think, between Fantastic Four and Spider-Man. But I think that, and then the Avengers is kind of, you know, it's a combination of existing characters.
Yeah. When he made the X-Men comic, was it intended to be in the same comic universe as the Avengers?
Yes.
So like the Avengers would be aware of those characters?
Yeah, yeah. And they were, even early on, you would have guest appearances. Now, one thing that you and I have talked about that I think becomes important now as we're talking about the MCU of it all, or will be, the Marvel Universe in the 60s was still so small that it made sense. Like the Avengers were all of the kind of superheroes that were doing more like
galactic.
Well, eventually, yeah. But also just like they were doing the more like military style missions that we can associate them with on the MCU side. Obviously they had supervillains and all that, but the X-Men were originally, like we've talked about, the kind of civil rights allegory. But, you know, you only had a handful. And so it was a lot easier to say, well, like these are the handful that are on the Avengers. This is how they all got their powers or the technology they use. And then this is like the Fantastic Four. They have a very specific origin story, Spider-Man. So it was a lot easier to like keep everyone defined. As the world grew out, I think it got a little messier. And I think the comics have struggled with the same thing we've talked about on the MCU, which is we now have so many superheroes and super people. Why are the X-Men specifically so discriminated against and targeted in ways that Captain America isn't? And they've dealt with that. But that was always the intention, to have them in the same world.
Another question. You know how the live action X-Men stuff is kind of focused on Wolverine? Yes, there's a whole cast, obviously, and they all do stuff, but Wolverine's kind of the focal point. Is that the case in the animated series? And if not him, is there one character that when you watch the whole series before X-Men 97, you kind of go like, the show's kind of about this person?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's kind of what I was teeing up. Wolverine does not even, you know, so the X-Men were created in 63. Wolverine shows up in, I think, 75.
Oh, wow. 12 years. Okay.
So, I mean, it's kind of a crazy, there aren't really many analogs to that. You know, it's like Wolverine is one of the most famous superhero characters, period. But on the show, you know, which I guess gets started roughly 15 years later, the team you see is almost unrecognizable from at least the way these characters were portrayed in the 60s, because they were going off of this, like, almost, it's not a reboot, it's all in the same continuity, but like in the 70s, the X-Men get such a
facelift.
Yes. Yeah. That it's like they brought a lot of new character designs in. And like I said, that's where you get Storm and Colossus and Nightcrawler, and most importantly, Wolverine, who does, I mean, he really was the star of that property, and that property was the star of Marvel for a long time. So in the show, I would say Wolverine is definitely the character that is most memorable and gets probably the most attention. The other one I would say that maybe people should keep in mind if they're just jumping onto X-Men 97, Jubilee is a character that was used in the show to basically be the audience stand-in, where it's like it's a young mutant that the X-Men save. It actually has a lot in common with the first X-Men film, to your point, where like the role that Rogue plays in that movie is kind of what Jubilee plays early on in the cartoon. And so you kind of you're introduced to the entire X-Men world through her. That's where we get a lot of exposition. And then we kind of watch her grow into more of a full-on team member by the end. And I think the creators of X-Men 97 have said like one of the changes now is she's kind of ascending to that status of like an actual team member and no longer like the kid. And I think they're moving maybe a new character into that role that I don't really need to talk about, because I think we're going to be introduced to Sunspot within the context of that show.
Wikipedia says X-Men 97 was reported to not be set within Marvel Studios' shared universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, since it continues the storylines of the original series, which DeMeo later confirmed, saying the series was its own thing. Within Marvel Comics Multiverse, the original series exists on Earth 92131. Mm-hmm. So this is a multiversal thing.
Which is worth keeping in mind, because, it might be a universe that we see a glimpse of in some way.
That number I just read, though, that's different than the live-action X-Men universe, too, right?
Right.
So that's not, like, obviously, I guess it's animated, but you wouldn't run into one of the animated characters where Monica Rambeau is right now.
No. I think if anything, they designate the X-Men cartoon as being in the same universe as like the Spider-Man cartoon and
not What If either, because What If is all the universes. Yeah.
Right.
Could be one of the What If stories.
I mean, that would be like such a fun Like that's the kind of creative stuff that I think would be
what the Watcher. You get a shot of the Watcher watching the X-Men 97 stuff go down.
Right. I mean, that would be like a unnecessary but fun shout out.
Okay, as we're about to put on a few episodes, I think you and I are going to have access to a few episodes this week as I'm talking. Mm-hmm. What's in closing, what's the last thing you'd want people to know? Like, what do you want people like me and other listeners who haven't seen this to know to fully enjoy this series? We talked about the impact it had in the 90s.
Right.
And kind of the thought behind the creation of it. But what is something, like, get my mind framed correctly for this series?
No, that's a great question. I think the first thing is just know the context here, not storyline-wise, because I have to believe the show is going to do a good job of welcoming in people like you that do not necessarily want to go back and watch five seasons of a 90s cartoon show to prep. So I think like the context that I'm talking about is more, this is supposed to take place in 1997. It is supposed to feel like, I mean, the whole show, when you go back and watch it, I mean, it's for us, even though there were elements of it at the time that were supposed to be futuristic, it's got such a nostalgic feel because you see people using like payphones and things. And that was just supposed to be like, that wasn't supposed to be a throwback. So I think knowing that, like, that's the context setting wise, but also like vibe wise, like it is not taking itself too seriously. And it's also like, on the other hand, leaning into melodrama. So it's like, in some ways, the X-Men comics and show kind of, they turn into soap operas in the best way, where it's like the whole thing that, again, this is reflected in those early X-Men films, like the love triangle with Logan and Scott and Jean, you know, and it's like, this stuff is, that's when the X-Men property really took off in the 70s, is when Chris Claremont really started adding in that, like,
the drama.
The relational drama, and that combined with like a bunch of aliens and lasers, everybody was just like, yeah, I'm in. And I think that that's kind of what you have to expect. Like, it's not, it's so different from at least the roots of the MCU, which are really interested in grounding things. That is not what this show is about. This show is about like space empires and like soul suckers and like your ex-girlfriend coming back with like massive hand claws because she's like wants revenge.
Obviously. It's like who doesn't have that problem?
Which, I mean, the thing, and in that way, it's relatable.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what keeps me centered in this show.
Exactly. Like, if nothing else, you can ground there. But I would say just that's, I think, what people need to do the most to enjoy it is know that this is supposed to give you that, like, Saturday morning cartoon feeling. Like, if you're watching, you know, Ninja Turtles or whatever. And
did you make it all the way through all five seasons again with some of our listeners?
I did. Yeah. And, you did? And well, okay. We will. This weekend is going to be the final.
Okay.
That's think cool. The final viewing.
But do you feel more ready?
I definitely do. It's also been fun because we've been trying to recreate, you know, doing the Saturday morning watches and putting it in that context, I think has made it a lot more fun than just trying to like binge through it as quickly as possible.
Okay. I think we'll do, Rob, is let's you and I watch episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. And then if it's clearly picking up from 96 and something that, like, feel free to inform me if there's something that I should be knowing if I had watched the others, you know, whatever. There'll be some stuff, even if it's just an Easter egg, you could be like, oh, and that's kind of a callback to 1994 when this happened or whatever. So feel free to do that stuff as we go along.
Well, and that's what I think. That's why I'm glad you haven't seen it, because I think that that'll be a good reminder. I do think, and this is a bit of a spoiler for people that don't I don't know, that haven't seen the series, but also at this point, if you're going to watch live, I don't think that you have time to make it through all seasons.
Sure.
I say that. Some of our listeners are.
Oh, you've done it. You could do it. I believe in
you. But I just mean like in the next week. But yeah, that's true. I probably could. But I will say the series ends giving the impression that Professor X is gone. Maybe like I'll leave it there. Like through the entire season or series, Xavier has been the team leader. If you've seen the trailer for X-Men 97, I think you know, it's maybe not that much of a spoiler. He is no longer leading the team. That's kind of where it's picking up. And I think that that's kind of the big question of like, what does the X-Men look like without Xavier? And we see like Cyclops moving into more of a leadership role, but I think we also see Magneto kind of moving into an Xavier type role. So I think it's a really different setup. That
what the hell's going on here?
Michael Scott style.
I think it's important for people to understand that. That's like maybe the one big plot thing just to set the table that that's not like a, we're not in some weird universe where Professor X is not there. We're just in a maybe post Xavier moment within that universe.
Amazing. I'm excited to have new content. For our listeners out there, give us a little bit of time to kind of feel out the rhythm of this all. You and I are going to watch a few and see what this kind of goes and feels like. There might be some room for us to talk about other things every week in conjunction with X-Men 97 and whatnot, depending on how it goes and what the weekly release is like and stuff. So,
well, what I'm so excited for you to watch this while we're going through our movie rewatch, because I think the show is generally seen as very, very comic accurate.
Okay.
And the seasons that exist are kind of like abbreviated versions of like, you know, a decade or two of X-Men comics. So for you, it's actually going to be a great, like that will be a great primer so that you kind of understand who characters are more or less in the comics. And so then whenever you see like Gambit show up in X-Men Origins Wolverine, you understand like what the comic version of that character looks like.
Sure.
Or like the Blob, you know, and what the comic version of that character looks like versus.
Which I don't know.
So yeah, I think that like I think it's going to make for some really fun conversations and really link up with the reviews we're doing on the Patreon side.
And we can't say who yet, but you and I are maybe going to have a chance to talk to a few of the creators of this show or actors from the show.
Yeah.
Which could be a really fun tie-in with a specific episode. You know, if we did a few of them and, hey, we're talking about episode 4 today, but also hear from so-and-so on their experience with episode 4, which could be a really fun way to go about it too. So if you subscribe to Friends From Work Plus, which you can find on our website or Discord or whatever, last Thursday we released X2 United, which is an absolute banger of an episode. And then the way we're rewatching it and a movie is every 2 weeks we're doing another one. So not this week, Thursday, but the following Thursday, we're going to be doing X-Men First Class. So we kind of took a step backwards in the timeline. We explained why over there. So even if you're not a subscriber, you can be rewatching at the same pace if you want to those films with us and then hop on Discord or wherever, send us an email and chat about it, which we love to hear from people. And so just on that front, it's X-Men First Class. And then we're going to do X-Men Wolverine Origins or Origins Wolverine.
Yeah.
That's where we're at there. So if that sounds interesting to you, check out Friends From Work Plus. But over here on the main feed, mainly talking about X-Men 97, which releases officially, I think it's going to be on Wednesdays is my belief, with the first two episodes releasing the first night. Which I'm okay with. Our episodes are still going to stay on Mondays, so you have some time to watch the show over the weekend, digest it, and then we'll be breaking it down every Monday.
Which I will, I like that the episodes are coming out on Monday. I'm sure that we will watch them more or less when they come out. But I would encourage people. It's been so fun doing our Saturday morning viewings of the series as we've been rewatching.
Keep it on Saturday morning.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of bummed that they didn't take the opportunity to follow up on that time slot.
Good point.
And so I like that, you know, people can, in the same
way
that
they put the ball in your court. The power's in your hands now. You can watch on Saturday morning if you want to.
So I would encourage people, especially if you have kids, I think that would be a really fun little tradition to start. And maybe then you can, if you haven't watched the old stuff, once this season's over, it'll give you something to go back and enjoy.
Here we go. Let's go. New content. I'm coming in with an open heart, humble mind, humble spirit. Let's find out what X-Men 97 is all about. Thank you for listening to Friends from Work, and we'll see you right back here next week talking about that here on Friends from Work.
Speaking of, as the outro music is playing, Laura Cartman at the Oscars was fun to see. Giving us a little X-Men music.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.